from the land of the free and the home of the Chiefs, with two-man coverage of the red and gold, this is the Locked On Chiefs Podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network.
Hey, and it's Locked On Chiefs. If you're a newbie, welcome to the show. We have a ton to talk about when it comes to these Kansas City Chiefs. I am Ryan Tracy, one of the hosts of the Locked On Chiefs podcast. I'm the founder of Rogue Analytics. We talk a lot of stats. We talk a lot of things that go into the game that you don't necessarily see on game day. So welcome aboard. We've been seeing a lot of new folks joining us, and we appreciate that. Check out the rest of the podcast network because we have tons of shows on every team in the NFL, as well as Matt Williamson doing the entire NFL show and Vinny Iyer doing the fantasy show. A lot of good information out there. Make sure you subscribe if you are a newbie. The easiest way is iTunes. There's also some feeds on the Megaphone homepage, our newest host. You have Stitcher. You have Google Play. You have all kinds of things. Spreaker's even rebroadcasting us now. You can log in and subscribe anywhere you like. When you do, iTunes is the place we'd like to get reviews. We have a deal going with Pro Football Focus that they're going to give away Edge subscriptions. So you can get stats and grades and fantasy insight for free if you leave a review for our show, Locked On Chiefs, on iTunes, and leave your Twitter handle in it. That's really important. They can't contact you otherwise. So with that in mind, strange days right now around Arrowhead and around this team. This show, we recorded kind of impromptu. Chris had something come up that he couldn't make our normal taping time, so it's just Seth and I today. If you're familiar with Seth Kaiser, the real Minnesota Chiefs fan, we talk a lot of film and a lot of scheme on this particular show this week, as well as every week, but that's what we're going over. And Chris isn't going to be able to make it. While we were recording, news came out about Tom Mahali. So there's a little bit of that here at the end, but I wanted to touch back and come back and give you a little bit of insight here on the beginning. And what we're hearing from all the beat writers, Matt Derrick and Therese and Teicher and all the guys from the Star, that Holly's in the building but not practicing, and that they haven't made an official move in regards to him. It was intimated from Andy Reid that yes, Tom is around, but they haven't done anything, and it's in Brett Veach's corner working with Tomba and his representatives. What that means is really the big mystery, and it's going to be something that continues to roll out as we're looking at early afternoon here now. We're going to give you an update that still we don't know anything. Does Tom Mahali play for this team again? Is he just physically unable and he's going to go on IR? Is there some kind of renegotiation going on? These are all possibilities. There could even be an outright cut. We have people asking us questions about what they should do with the outside linebacker position in terms of cutting somebody. And this may make part of that discussion mute. We will wait to see what happens with Tom Mahali, and we will give you everything we know as we know it, especially if there's anything significant. So bear with us for now. I think Tom Mahali has been very vocal running up to the season, as well as what's been going on lately in terms of wanting to get back and wanting to push this team forward. I think he is emotionally invested in this team. Whether he's physically capable of playing anymore or not, just don't know. And maybe they've come to an impasse both with some of his social media antics as well as not being able to produce and get on the field. We just don't know. So what we're going to do is take it as it comes. We will update you as soon as we know. We appreciate you hanging in. And we're going to get to this discussion with Seth today about the run defense and about what we can expect, how they go about fixing that. You know, it's another evolution of what's going on with Bob Sutton and the Chiefs run D this week. So here we go. And on top of everything else, we have to talk with Seth because he looked at film. I looked at a little bit of film and oh, boy. What do you got, buddy?
In the time it took you to say that sentence, C.J. Anderson ran for another 8 yards.
Ruh-roh. Oh, yeah. Here we go again. Man, and just before we get into all the X's and O's, is it just me, or did you find yourself rooting that if they were going to run like that for 170-some-odd yards, why couldn't it be Jamal?
You know, yes. I'm really with that. You know, it's interesting watching Jamal. He's clearly not. Well, I wouldn't even say clearly. When, you know, that 18-yard run he had, it was just like, man, his burst looks like it's there. He's still running pretty smooth. I just don't think it's quite what it was. because I think
– I don't think his cuts are the same. I think once he got going downhill, I agree with you. He looked like he had that spring.
Yeah, and I do think – you know, I think Jamal Charles 3 years ago scores a tutty on that play. And although Parker made a – because if you watch the Madden cam view of that, Parker was it. If he did not make a tackle there – and he had to break down in the open field. He made a really nice stop there. If he does not do that, Jamal is gone. And even if he's not quite as fast as he used to be, there was no one remotely close enough to catch him. And, I mean, so that was a borderline game saver because, I mean, that changes so many things, right? Then Jamal doesn't fumble. And I mean, then we're talking the whole thing looks real different today. But yeah, it was an interesting game. People are just mad. People are more upset after the Denver game than they were after the Raiders game, like with the Chiefs.
Yeah, and I have talked to a ton of people about this, and I'll tell you my take. And I understand where they're coming from because I'm pretty frustrated myself. This is a game when you look at it on paper and how bad the Denver Broncos are right now, especially on their offense. The Chiefs should have been able to dominate. Yep. And after getting embarrassed against Pittsburgh, screwing it up against the Raiders, you wanted to see them come out and be what they can be. And when they didn't get that, people are mad.
People are very mad. You know, it's interesting to me, though, because when you really look at it, the Chiefs were up, 28-13 until there was, like 1 minute left to play? It's a similar situation. Like, I mean, you know, like if you look at the Houston game a few weeks ago, the Chiefs really blew Houston out of the water. But people didn't quite feel that way after the game. Why? Because Houston scored a couple garbage time touchdowns. And people, and I'm telling you, this is me too after a game. So I'm not like just calling people out or anything, but recency bias is a real thing, not just over the course of weeks, but over the course of hours.
Oh, yeah.
And if your last takeaway from a game was the opposing team scoring a touchdown, it really changes things. Because, I mean, if you're a Chiefs fan and you'd have an automatic, like as soon as you start thinking, man, I wish they would have done more. If you looked at 29-13, you'd be like, well, they doubled up on them. And so, I mean, really, they beat them pretty convincingly. There was no point in that game. The only point in that game I even kind of doubted the outcome was, of course, the very, very, very beginning of the game. Although after I saw the first as soon as the Chiefs went up 7-0, I was like, this game's over. Well, because they're not the Raiders. They don't have Derek Carr who can pull some magic crap out of his butt, you know? They don't. And then even when they pulled within a touchdown, because the Chiefs offense had been kind of meh, I was a little. I was a little worried. But not really. I still was like, nah, they'll be fine. And then, you know, Alex hit Kelsey down the field and they got a field goal. And as soon as they were up two scores again, I was like, there's no way. So people really, I guess what I would ask people, did you ever really doubt the outcome of that game? Like, really? Because against a division opponent who you got to remember, people were talking about the Super Bowl for Denver 3 weeks ago. And that's the problem with recency bias. In football, it works two ways. One, it works during the game itself. And two, it works with regards of how the season's going. And so people, you know, I've had people tell me when they're like, oh, the Chiefs won't be able to beat good teams. I'm like, they've beaten like four. And then someone's response is, well, they wouldn't beat Philadelphia if they played today. And I'm like, well, wow, way to base your opinion on an unprovable statement. Although Philly with their new running back's a little scarier, but.
Yeah, but I mean, until yesterday, right, when they acquired him.
Yeah.
It's still the same team doing the same things. So
is it just me, or does that almost feel like a Chiefs beater move? Like, now I'm sure that's not exactly what they're thinking. They need help with their running game. But I mean, picture if you're in Philly, the only team that's beat you all year was Kansas City, and they did so fairly convincingly.
Right.
What's the one thing you could do?
Especially after they show you that anybody and his grandma can run on this
team. Yep. And so what do you do? Because they've already got a ground and pound guy in Blunt. So bring in another ground and pound guy. I am legitimately concerned, and obviously they won't see them again to the Super Bowl. But I'm worried that if that's what happens, that you're going to see those two guys run the ball 50 times. Even though Carson Wentz has played great this year, the way you beat the Chiefs is you give the ball to those guys 50, 60, 70 times, right? I mean, you just run them to death. But, I mean, that's neither here nor there. But
true, but let's take a minute, and then let's talk about the details. What is here and there, and that is this defense what it's doing, what it's not doing, and what Bob Sutton is thinking. It's got a lot of people fired up.
I am fascinated why people are so upset about a game that, look, they you know, everyone talks about Denver's mistakes, and that's the only reason the Chiefs won. Well, the only reason the Chiefs didn't win by 30 was their mistakes. You know, imagine if Demetrius Harris doesn't drop that pass.
Oh, don't even get me started. Oh, and everyone wants to roll their eyes. There's nothing wrong with Demetrius Harris. Yes, there is. It's the same thing. It's always been wrong with Demetrius Harris.
Yeah, it's, you know, I don't understand the lack of investment in another tight end. I just don't. If you took Demetrius Harris off this offense and put back in, like, you remember when they had Fasano? Who I think is still in the, yeah. I think he's still in the league, but
I think he is.
But if you just give them Fasano, you know, a decent blocker and a decent pass catcher, I think the offense would be averaging like an extra 3 points a game. I mean,
I tell you what, I'd take Sean McGrath right now.
Oh man, that dude caught everything. And so I mean, imagine, because that drive ended in a field goal instead of a touchdown, right? And so now imagine he catches that instead. Now instead of having 29, the Chiefs have what, 33? Checking the math. Yes, yeah. And so now they've got 33. Now they win 33-19. That changes the way people view the game. And it changes the way, because they had that good feeling, right, from that touchdown.
Sure,
and
sure.
So, and it wasn't just that. They had multiple other easy drops. I mean, Hill had – was it Hill? No, it wasn't Hill. Kelsey had one.
I think it was Robinson.
Yeah, Robinson had one. Kelsey had one. You know, the Chiefs made big mistakes of their own. When on Alex Smith's big scramble that was like huge, right? That 14-yard scramble.
Mm-hmm.
Robinson came wide open in the slot. Maybe Alex could have seen him, but it was more of an issue. Like, you know, Von Miller was in there. Like, I mean,
yeah, and it was opposite side in the slot, wasn't it?
Correct. Yeah, it was the left side slot, and Alex, his first read was on the right side. And so it's one of those where, like, you know, someone might take a screenshot of it and say, oh, it's terrible, Alex missed him. I probably won't even count that as a missed shot. That's a flush. But
yeah.
But I mean, you know, so it's a play,
man,
like that. If Schwartz is able to hold Miller off for a second there, I can almost guarantee you Alex comes back to that side and says, oh, hey, Robinson doesn't have anyone within 20 yards of him. And, you know, so there were mistakes on both sides. And this argument that, well, if you took away Denver's mistakes, they would have won. And I said this in my podcast. That is true of, like, literally every game ever.
Sure.
You know, I mean,
that's the definition of competition.
Yeah, if you took away all the mistakes the Chiefs made against Pittsburgh in the playoffs, they would have won. You know, I mean,
right?
That's just such a silly analysis. And so I guess I don't understand why people are so upset. I mean, I do. The Chiefs aren't perfect. And I think in the first 5 weeks, they really had people thinking like, man, this is like a dominating team. And since then, they've shown themselves to be more good than great.
Well, and I think personally, that's a function of the league, too. That's what film study does for you in a league that is built to have teams be able to adjust and have parity. That's the point.
Yeah, especially this year.
The thing that sticks out to me, and just last note on the offense, yes, there were plays that left behind, but man, it was really stark, I thought, in the play calling as it diminished and got less aggressive. I was really happy with the first half where they gained 199 yards. They finished the game with 276.
They really
– got 77 yards in the second half.
And they really – you know, the few times they tested the ball down the field in the second half, they had some success there. Because you had the deep shot to Kelsey on the left side. You had the deep shot to Harris that, I mean, that was a great throw, too.
It was
just
right?
Like, on a day where Alex otherwise struggled to some extent, he had a couple of really nice throws, and that was one of them. And it's like, come on. Like, I mean.
How funny is this? Because I thought on the day, I thought Alex's best throws were all the long ones.
Yeah. Yeah, he's like bizarro Alex Smith this year. One day we're going to have a special edition and figure out what on earth they're going to do in the offseason. But
he's a robot.
Yeah, he is. He's seriously, I mean, it's Andy Reid really does deserve Coach of the Year for coaxing this kind of game. Not just the Denver game, but I mean this type of game in general out of Alex Smith. It's been unbelievable. But I know the big issue of the day is the defense.
Yeah, and I'm, man, we can...
Ew.
Let's start with the most obvious. I don't like the way Bob Sutton calls this defense. I never have. I've been bitching about it all season. But running five box defenders plus Dan Sorensen is not a way to stop the run, especially on first down.
Yes.
Please help me understand.
I don't understand. Now, look, the issues aren't just schematic in nature, and we can get into those things. Like you said, this is the thing to start off with. Sutton, if I'm reading this correctly, I think there's two things going on. One is that Sutton understands that stopping the pass is exponentially more important in the NFL than stopping the run. And I can't prove it to you conclusively, but I can offer pretty strong evidence for it.
I'd agree with you, but I take a small exception to that, because when you stack it so much so, and what we've seen with this team this year, like we were saying earlier, the way to beat this team is on the ground, and having an obvious weakness like that, you can't have that either. You got to have some balance.
You do, but it's kind of interesting to me. What are the two games where the Chiefs got gashed on the ground the most this year? Pittsburgh.
This last one.
Pittsburgh and Denver, right?
Yep.
The opposing team scored how many points in those games? Right? And then look at the Oakland game. The Chiefs did a good job stopping the run in that game. Look at the Patriots game. They didn't do a great job, but they did a better job stopping the run that game. And the opponents put up 30. Well, not quite 30 in Patriots' case, because they blew them out of the water. But you know what I mean.
Yeah, right. You're definitely giving up more points when you're allowing them to have success in the air versus the ground.
And so here's what I'm trying to figure out. And someone said it to me, like, this might be the most effective but utterly deflating method of defense in the NFL right now. Because, yes, I totally get it. And the Broncos could have scored more points if it weren't for some miscues. But it's almost like Sutton is banking on this idea that long drives aren't sustainable. If you force a team to run 15 plays, you're more likely to have a mistake or a turnover or a couple of errant throws or, you know, a blocker who screws up. Because, you know, on running plays, and I know, you know, you're a defense aficionado, so you see this on film, a lot of things need to go right for a run play to work. Now, same with a pass play, but I would argue even more things need to go right. Because like on a pass play, you really just need your one receiver to win and the quarterback to find him and the pressure to not be horrific. On a run play,
yeah, 2.25 seconds, the ball can be out,
yeah,
and then it's a one-on-one with the wideout.
Right, whereas on a run play, it really relies on everyone doing their job effectively for multiple seconds. And I get, and then even if on the defense, let's say the offense does execute it well, it's probably only a 5 yard gain or a 6 yard gain as opposed to a 15 yard gain. And I think that's the analysis Sutton is using, because he can't, there's no way he doesn't know this is an issue. It's impossible for him to not know that.
No, I think he's choosing his poison. And I think, and I talked about this with Chris yesterday, and the whole thing about Marcus Peters and his lack, his complete turnaround and lack of interest in tackling.
Yeah.
But from that perspective, tying that in a little bit, if you're Sutton and you're choosing to let them run on you so that you can protect what is a weak secondary, in my opinion, doesn't have a number two corner, and if you were to get Marcus Peters hurt, I mean, this is a defense that can't stop the pass.
Yeah, I could see that being part of the issue. Now, there's no way, I don't view Peters as under orders or anything, but it could be some subliminal messaging going on there, like, dude, stay healthy. Now, the problem is,
yeah, that's where I'm seeing it too.
Yeah. Now, the problem is, you know, a lot of times players, what I've always heard, and I don't know how true this is that you're more likely to get hurt playing not to get hurt. Right. And maybe that's true, maybe it's not true, I don't know. But I do agree, you know, Marcus Peters goes down, the defense is in real trouble because, now Nelson being back helped.
Yeah, I think so too.
He looked, you know, again, I haven't reviewed the All-22 yet. I don't know if I'll have time to get to it. I might review the All-22 against Dallas. I think that'll tell us a little more, because Trevor Siemian just doesn't tell you much.
Right, and it was his first game back anyway. The only thing I took away from him is he played a significant snap count.
Yeah, he played a significant snap count, looked perfectly fast, played very physical against the run, which they desperately needed. They needed a corner. Now, Terrence Mitchell's willing to do that to an extent, but he just hasn't been in that position a lot because he's been busy getting thrown on 40 times a game. You know, Gaines can't provide that. Acker, in my opinion, doesn't provide that. Nelson provides a physical presence that you can do run blitzes with him. You can send him after the quarterback. He's an aggressive guy. And I actually heard, and I've had no way to confirm this, I heard from someone who was at the game that after a run gain where Peters kind of laid back, that it looked like Nelson got in his face. which would be interesting. Because what do you say? Right? What do you say if you're Marcus Peters and a guy gets your face like, "What are you doing? This is football. Hit him." You know, Peters isn't a guy to take crap, but what do you say?
I don't.
Yeah, you have no defense at that point.
Exactly. And so,
although I do have to say before we go any farther, this run defense is not Marcus Peters' fault. Yes, he could have made a couple of plays, but systemically, the interior of this defense is the problem.
I would say so, yes. The problem, so I think it's a conglomeration of things. And I was saying, you know, with Sutton, there's two things. The first one was the whole, you know, the analysis about running versus passing. And the second thing, I think he's been able to get away with what he's been doing for years because of the presence of Eric Berry and Derek Johnson. And to a lesser extent, the presence of Hussein Abdullah. Because if you swap out, say Murray and put in Sorensen or put in Abdullah, I think the defense looks significantly better.
I agree with you.
And Murray, no offense to him, yeah, he seemed to play fine against Broncos after a tough outing against the Raiders, but
a couple of miscues. But yeah, I mean, for all intents and purposes, he's a rookie, so I'm going to give him leeway.
It's just his run defense doesn't seem particularly good.
No, he's 195 pounds.
Yeah, he just doesn't seem all that physical. Whereas Abdullah, he wasn't as good as Berry, but he was a very, very, very good run defender. Very good tackler, willing to hit.
And tell me this, because I think looking back, let's say 3 years ago with Abdullah, you know, I think that time, I think the league wanted to be a passing league as much. I don't think they were as willing or as able to come down and say, okay, we're going to go big and run on him. Mm-hmm. And so I think that alleviated some of the problem as well.
Yeah, you're seeing the pendulum swing back a little bit as teams are starting to adjust to exactly what Sutton's been doing for years. More and more teams started doing it, right? The whole hybrid safety thing became – Sutton was really kind of a trailblazer with that. The Patriots had been doing it for a while, but more and more teams started doing it. And I do really – I think it's a case because, you know, people – I've had people ask me, well, Berry went down in 2014, but the defense didn't take this huge step back. What's going on this year? And like I said, the problem is instead of – Branch and Abdullah, you've got Sorensen and Murray, and they're just not as good. Sorensen's being asked to do something he can't do. He's a physical guy. He's willing to play like that, but he's not able to shed blockers. And he's basically being asked to play pseudo linebacker. And it's not working. So that's a scheme thing. And then, like you said, the core of the defense, the only good, consistently good, and I haven't seen enough of Nacho yet to make a decision on him, but he had some plays where he got rolled against Denver. Now, and we'll see moving forward, because he does look stronger than he was last year, but the only consistently good run defender on the line is Benny Logan.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think Alan Bailey has his times. Yep. I think he's the only other one who consistently take on a double team and not get bowled out of there.
Yep. And even he struggles with that occasionally because that's not his game. He's not quite as thick in the lower body as Logan.
Right.
And so he's better off. But, I mean, what you really have is Logan, you know, Logan's taking some heat from Chiefs fans, and I'm like, are you kidding me? Because he's had some bad snaps too. But by and large, he's the one getting double teamed, and other guys – Chris Jones included, are not winning their one-on-one matchups.
Well, yeah, and he's the only guy consistently playing the run correctly.
Yes. Oh, man. You guys are not now, I think a lot of Chiefs fans, I don't know if you guys have discussed here what the term when you're talking about run fits, because Chiefs fans are starting to hear that more and more. I think it'd be simpler, and I know it's more complicated than this, but I think it'd be simpler for people to just understand it in terms of gap responsibility.
Yeah.
You know, because
that's
everyone
boils down to anyway.
Yep. Yeah, and that's really what it boils down to. And the Chiefs right now, I would say you see some of that problem with the line. If I were to pin one, if I were to pin one problem on the defense and say it was a problem of player execution, I would say it's coming from the inside linebacker position.
I can't disagree with you. And I don't want to get off on a rant, but I see people picking and choosing their holes, not taking on blockers and reading, and it's frustrating.
There's been a lot of wrong guessing. Mm. If you look, and I actually gift it, and I actually the point I made on that was that all the defensive linemen didn't win one on one, but it was the Booker touchdown, 6 yards, and the inside linebacker,
the only one on the field, right?
Yeah, well, yeah, rather than just charging into the gap, which I don't think that would have worked anyway because with the alignment they were in, no one was behind him.
Right.
But rather than doing that, he danced to the side and guessed a different gap, and Booker could have walked. I could have run that into the end zone. I really could have.
That was the one where you had Ron Leary going after Dan Sorensen, right?
Well, that one was where you had, I think it was Leary, going after Derek Johnson.
Ah, okay.
Sorensen,
the
they're actually
ILB on the field, right? Because they were in dime still.
Correct. Everyone and everyone else was, and they had spread out the rest of the defense. Everyone else was out to the side. And then people trying to blame Peters for that is like, no, he had no way of being in position. But really, what's going on with the run defense is, it really relied with what they did on Derek Johnson being an exceptional run defender, and that has not been the case this year.
Yeah, it's not quite the same. Well, and let me ask you this. I see that coupled, and I haven't done a full review. I'm going to look at every snap that Reggie Ragland plays, which is not enough in my opinion. I think they need to be in base a little bit more, or at least a full-size four-man front with two ILBs. But I see him hesitant. I see him at the snap not taking ground and being flat-footed almost, staying at his current depth, reading a lot more. And I think we've seen that from Ramique Wilson before, so I want to think that's a coaching point.
I believe it is a coaching point because we're seeing that with Derek Johnson this year too. You know, I actually I can't say specifically from where, but I know for a fact that that's a coaching point because I've had someone reach out to me who would know. Mm-hmm. And so it's, for whatever reason, Sutton wants them to sit there and read kind of like they're doing some kind of two gap system type deal. Right. But the problem is they're not a two gap system. I don't think. Now it's almost impossible to tell because you're seeing so many errors being made. You can legitimately watch a snap and be not sure whether they were supposed to be one gapping or two gapping. That's happened to me at least. I'm sure there are smarter people than me that it's not confusing, but it's just tough to say. I mean, really what I'd like to see them get to is a one gap system, give everyone one responsibility and tell them shoot your gap. Cause Chris Jones can do that. Alan Bailey can do that.
Arnard can
not. Yeah. Everyone can, that speaks. The only effective two gapper on the defensive line, like actually good one, is Benny Logan. Yeah. And so I don't know why you're asking guys to do that who aren't that good at it. And so that's an area of frustration for me with Sutton. But I mean, ultimately it does come down to execution as well, where you're just not seeing guys get the job done. You're not seeing the linemen come out of their blocks quickly enough. It's just been a frustrating gig all the way around.
I have to agree. And Chris will laugh because he's not here to answer this. Folks, Chris is somewhere else, unable to make the show. And I'm going to bring it back to this because with the same personnel and their abilities, I get to this point that I was in the preseason when he was originally let go and found himself out of a job.
Oh, no.
I don't think it would work personality-wise with Andy Reid, but imagine, if you will, this same group of players told to at all costs attack everything. Does this defense take a step forward or a step back if Rex Ryan's doing it?
It's just such a different style.
I know.
I would think. I mean, I just don't know. It's tough because, again, people are really down on the defense. But, you know, on a points per game basis, they're actually not doing that badly.
No.
But, yeah, it would be nice. I think people would love to see them attack more, especially when you've got Justin Houston. You know, it would be nice to see them in more of an attack mode. Because I look at the defensive linemen that they have, and they just don't seem suited for two-gapping. They seem suited for one-gapping and just having a single responsibility there. And I feel like if Chris Jones decides he's going to fill a certain gap, and that's his only responsibility, he's going to get there. Whereas when he tries to stand the offensive lineman up to two gap, he doesn't look nearly as effective because his pad level sucks.
Well, the reason that I bring Rex up again, not only because I think he's best at calling a defense, not being a head coach, but my thing is I look at this personnel and I look at their trouble against the run and pressure being all things equal. If you can get to the quarterback, you can protect that secondary. I think I want to see this team run a 46 a little bit more. I want to see them take care of those A gaps. I think they have the personnel to do it, just like you said, a one-gap system where everybody's got one particular assignment I think they can do really well in, and that's what I want to see more out of this defense.
I think that would definitely be an improvement, yes. Now, will they do it? I don't know. Now, I have more faith in Sutton than most to adjust and adapt. He's showing a willingness to do so with personnel, and he's showing a willingness to do so to a lesser extent with scheme, but he still has juggled around the scheme.
Yeah, I really like that play. I think it was second quarter where you got Ford and Houston next to each other.
Yeah, that was
yeah,
fun.
Use that more. Do some things like that.
And he's been moving Houston around more, so that's been fun to see. But right now, it just seems, it really does feel like stopping the run is not a priority to him.
Oh, and in regard to Houston, I did look that up. He did rush over 90% of passing snaps in this last game.
Holy smokes, cool.
Yeah, right?
That's good news.
Ended up with 4 pressures and 2 sacks. Amazing what you do when you send the guy.
Yeah, interestingly enough.
I guess it was the Broncos, but hey.
Yeah, hey, you know, that's another thing. Seriously, the Houston thing. I got to tell you, I've become quite impatient with people who are overwrought about Justin Houston. It's becoming more and more. He has been by far the best player on the defense this year. It hasn't even been close. You take Justin Houston out and you put in an average outside linebacker through these games. For one, I think the Chiefs have at least one more loss, at least. Because he had some really clutch sacks down the stretch against both the Pats, against the Chargers, who always give the Chiefs problems. He terrorized Wentz for a while. I mean, it's just silly. People just count sacks. That's all they do. And so, from as far as they're concerned, because I think he's got like 7.5 on the year, and they're like, "Oh, he's not the same as he was his 22 sack year." It's like, okay, you got to get off that as a way of really gauging productivity in a pass rusher.
Well, and I tried to illustrate that last week on a piece at Chiefs Digest, and I looked at the top 20 pass rushers in terms of overall pressures, not just sacks. And he was sitting at 16, but he played like 20% less rushes than Khalil Mack and Von Miller. And so, I mean, he's getting nearly the same amount of production out of rushing only 75% of the time.
Right. And that just goes to show what kind of player he really is. And one thing I think people have been a little quieter this week, although that particular crowd now they've switched to, well, it's because the Broncos suck or whatever. But the fact that Houston got a lot of good airtime from Gruden, it's astonishing how much, and I hope this doesn't bother people that I say this, but it is astonishing to me how much what the announcers say during a game impacts the narrative people walk away from the game with.
Yeah.
It's astonishing to me.
Well, you know, a lot of folks want to see the result of the play. They're watching the ball. And then they have to rely on those announcers to tell them things that they didn't see.
And to me, that's, you know, crud. That's what I do when I watch the game. That's why, when I watch the games, people ask me what I'm seeing sometimes. And I'm like, I don't know. Because I don't. I'm not charting anything. I'm not watching anything. I'm just watching the ball and enjoying the game. And there's just no way to analyze. That's why whenever someone says to me, well, I've watched every game, to me it's like unless you were specifically watching the game for the purpose of analyzing, you're going to miss stuff.
Yeah.
And that's just how that works. But, I mean, fortunately, like I said, Houston had a good game. I'm excited to see how they do against the Cowboys. It'll be interesting to me if they win the game, but you know they only win by 10 or something, and they walk into the bye 7-2 with a brutal schedule, and everyone's still complaining. That's going to be
right?
Hilarious.
Well, and speaking of the Cowboys, just real quick synopsis: how you feel about them? Can they win it? What's their big hurdle?
I think it is going to be run defense, even with Ezekiel Elliott out. Obviously, that makes it easier. But Dallas's offensive line is still very good. On the flip side, the Raiders' offensive line is very good, and the Chiefs were able to stop the run against them. So it'll be interesting to see what they can do. Dak Prescott scares me a little bit. He's got that ad-lib ability that seems to give the Chiefs problems. But I do think they're going to need to move Dez Bryant around. He is not Marcus Peters is not a good matchup for him. It's kind of similar to like a Demaryius Thomas type thing. Peters is just, he feasts on guys who aren't really fast. Like that's his game. Yeah. And so I don't think Dallas has the horses. And I don't think their defense is remotely as good as the Denver defense. Morse will have another week back. Hopefully LDT will be playing. Although it'll be interesting to see if they keep him out and give him until after the bye week. Because Fulton at right guard isn't as much an emergency as Irving.
No, not near.
It's still Yeah, it's still not good because Fulton is not a good guard, in my opinion. But he's like sub-average. He's not like
abysmal.
Awful.
Yeah, I'm with you.
Yeah, which, you know, and this will, because I know we got to close out, so we don't have time to talk about it. But it's concerning to me that the two, you know, big moves that Veach has made so far, you know, I mean, we'll see how Raglan would look with more snaps. But, man, I was really hoping on seeing more of an immediate return when you're willing to make those aggressive moves, you
yeah,
know?
Yeah, but especially with Raglan, you got to consider, I mean, he didn't play a snap his rookie season. So he is all intents straight out of college. So, I mean, that's where I'm
that's
true. From. But I agree with you. I want to see a lot more on him.
Well, you made me feel better, so never mind.
Well, I'm concerned about that Dez matchup. I think he might have a chance to go off against, you know, whoever's playing out on the outside. If they start Nelson, I think he's got that height disadvantage, but I think he's aggressive enough in the body and he can stay with him. They might have a chance, but once they have to go to that nickel, I think Dez is going to eat pretty well.
It just all depends on who they have on him. I worry about after.
Yeah. Oh, I do too. I mean, and just before we go, you sit Mitchell down. I think Andy Reid said something about, you know, trying to give him another perspective from the sideline. He's still the better corner, isn't he?
By a
good margin, in my opinion. But do you think that is enough to turn him around, to get him where he needs to be, playing the ball better, maintaining his mirror better?
Mm-hmm. You know what? I just got distracted by something that we should probably talk about. No, I'm sorry. I know I completely went off the line, but there's apparently some stuff brewing about Tamba Hali. Andy Reid on Tamba, and I quote this from Tom Martin on KCTV5. I don't know exactly the situation right now. That's between Brett Veach, Tamba, and his reps.
Whoa.
That just came out like 20 minutes ago while we were sitting here chatting. And so Reid says Tamba Hali did not practice this morning and no move made. We'll see if Hali practices this afternoon because they activated him.
So that he's available to practice, but whether he can or not. And I said something last week. I'm not so sure that his knees are ever going to be back. I don't know that he ever plays again. But if they're talking reps, then it's not just a physical thing.
Yeah. And so that's interesting, you know, saying Andy, you know, I don't know, like saying that's between him and Brett Veach. And I mean, there's definitely something going on there.
Lord knows they need some help.
And I don't know what it is. So hopefully, you know, hopefully that ends up sussing itself out. But so hopefully you understand how distracted I got there talking about corners when I was like, wait, what's going on? No.
Folks, it's lunchtime on Wednesday. Yeah, this might have changed by the time you hear this, but this is what's going on this moment.
Yes, so you get to hear our angst as we think. Because, I mean, I think mid-season drama, I think they just cut it.
I mean, after all the hubbubaloo before the season and not being able to be available, not being healthy at that point.
Well, yeah, he's been getting paid this whole time. Like, I got to tell you, at a certain point, it's just like, look, man, appreciate. Because, I mean, Tom is an all-time Chief. I love that guy, but at a certain point, it's like, well, okay.
Yeah, if you're going to just keep rocking the boat to rock the boat, I mean, that ain't going to help.
Right. So, yeah, I guess hopefully, like you said, hopefully it's sussed out by the time people hear this. Oh.
Well, thank you. I know we went over it. I appreciate you being able to spend the time again.
Yeah, no worries at all. This is always
right.
Fun.
We will regroup maybe a couple of times during the bye week. We have plenty to talk about. All right. You have a good one, pal. Thanks for being with us.
Yep, thanks for having me.
Thanks for listening to the Locked On Chiefs podcast. While you're out there, give us a rating or review and reach out to us on Twitter @RyanTreseyNFL and @ChrisClarkNFL. We'll talk to you next time.